exposing the motives and agenda of the world's most powerful.
Unleashed.
This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, the United States, the once proud leader of the Western free world, is now descending into the realm of banana republic as the nation continues to prosecute one of the leading presidential candidates, Donald J. Trump, and try to invalidate him from office, bankrupt him, have his assets seized, and destroy the lives and careers of anyone around him who stayed loyal. This is America 2024, and they're doing it under this justification. Let's play clip four. No one is above the law as they pound our democracy into the ground.
The idea that no person is above the law is a bedrock principle of American justice.
No man is above the law, no matter what the crime.
And I agree with you. No man is above the law. No person is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one's above the law.
No one is above the law.
No man is above the law.
Nobody is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No man is above the law.
He has to be held accountable. He's not above the law.
First of all, that statement is a lie. Many people are above the lie, and above the law. Anthony Fauci, above the law. Joe Biden, above the law. Hunter Biden, above the law. Anyone who the media and corporate interests want to protect is above the law. And that's the way it works. Anyone who threatens it is not above the law. And that's who gets attacked. And that's why Donald Trump, if you ever have any doubts about why he resonates so strongly with many Americans, it's because of that reaction from the establishment. And it's so disgusting to see Mike Pence just jumping in on all of that. Mike Pence disqualified himself for ever running, as I said in my book, for dog catcher when he wore the mask, stood at podiums with Anthony Fauci, promoted lockdowns, promoted ventilators, and even in his book in 2023, still promoting all the same crap, promoting the fact that he worked with 3M to get masks to everyone and get production out there so we can mask up the children. The man is literally clueless on the real world of which we face. He's a complete tool of the establishment, never even should have run for president, happy he was humiliated. By all accounts, he appears to be a decent man in his personal life, but clueless politically. I even question his intelligence. To write what he wrote about COVID in 2023 in his book either was incredibly sloppy, uninformed, or just plain dumb. And I don't know. I mean, I used to like Mike Pence at some level. I mean, I never really liked him that much. I was never a huge fan. My moment of Donald Trump first of all, I was always for Donald Trump. I was really impressed with his President Obama birth certificate when he would go on mainstream media and argue it so articulately. I was impressed. But the moment he won me over completely and totally was the Republican debate when he called for the end of NATO, when he called for an end of the whole Cold War structure and our corporate military industrial complex. And he said it to Jeb Bush. He criticized the Iraq, Afghanistan war. It was the only time any Republican, other than a Ron Paul, but he was a major candidate, you know, at the time, only Donald Trump and Ron Paul have ever challenged it on a Republican debate stage. I mean, there may have been some other minor candidate, but this was the front runner, and he stood by it. It was really impressive, just saying the things that enraged the establishment. And that's why Donald Trump is not above the law or whatever law they can trump up at that moment. Okay. In the last hour, I talked about this absolutely insane story, but completely fitting in with everything we know about the net zero climate agenda. And that was the German minister threatening indefinite driving bans on the weekend to meet net zero goals. They're not me. Now, it doesn't sound like he's 100% serious. He's floating the idea to raise a ruckus, and he's got the net zero climate activists all upset. Like, you're unduly upsetting the people. But just to give you an idea of how the climate activists and the net zero agenda works. This is Biden climate advisor. I believe she's former now. She stepped down. Gina McCarthy. She was also Obama's EPA administrator, warning the airlines. It's a short clip about what happens when you don't go along with the government's net zero climate agenda. It's all part of the Great Reset. Listen to how this unelected bureaucrat sounds like a common thug. Clip six.
We have solutions that can deliver. We're actually going to do 100 rules this year alone on appliances, just like you asked. We are developing partnerships on how we work together for new building standards, even for sustainable airlines. Who'd have thunk that they'd be all in, but they better be or they're going to be out of here.
Who'd have thunk? First of all, she has 100 new regulations, just like you asked. Who's asking? Probably some lobbying group, some ideological activist group funded by some billionaire. We want these 100 regulations. We're doing that. We're responding to the people's will. She's an unelected bureaucrat. And then she goes on about sustainable airlines. And if the airlines aren't on, they're out of here. That's how you end up with car dealerships going along with EV mandates. It's a combination of collusion and weakness. This is the banality of evil. Again, I keep bringing up that phrase, but it's not the jackbooted thug with a machine gun in a prison camp. It's Gina McCarthy threatening airlines if they don't go along with sustainable airline agenda. Or, you know, CNN's already called for carbon passports issued for every citizen to monitor your travel so that you have a limit, because you can't just travel whenever you want. Earth can't handle that. No, no, no. We don't live in those times anymore. We live in a time of deprivation, of climate targets, and everyone. And by the way, we're all in this together, except for the billionaires and the foundations and the corporate media and the politicians and all everyone else who doesn't have to follow the rules. But no one is above the law, who are defined as the masses. And of course, that's you and I. We are the masses. This next clip is Justin Trudeau in Canada. Apparently, election is being called. Now, we had Tom Harris on, the Canadian, trying to explain the Canadian election laws last year, and I don't understand it. It's not his fault that I don't understand it. It's just crazy. But it sounds like Justin Trudeau is a prime minister for life in Canada. Oh, well, what can you do? You just have to accept it. Enjoy Justin Trudeau. And then I saw some old clips of him, by the way. This is when he was in, I believe, either high school or early college. He doesn't care what anyone says. He loves to be smeared and called names. He's just built that way. So, you know, nothing you can say will affect him and nothing you can say will persuade him. I guess it's something that threatened his power, but he's got it set up so that he has no threats to his power. This is 8 years. Justin Trudeau Liberals have raised tax hikes. This is what it's been like, what they promised and what they've delivered in Canada. Clip one.
I want to assure Canadians that our belief is we need to invest in middle-class Canadians, support middle-class Canadians, and we will not be raising taxes on the middle class. We will not be raising taxes on the middle class.
Federal government is raising the alcohol excise tax.
The highest alcohol excise tax increase in 40 years.
Cost of gas went up overnight as an increase to the federal carbon tax has gone into effect today.
The federal carbon price will increase $15 from $65 a ton to $80.
A person can't get ahead in life. There's no possibility of saving money.
I can't pay my bills and taxes and buy food because it's too much.
Ottawa plans on increasing the levy each year until 2030.
We will not be raising taxes on the middle class. We will not be raising taxes on the middle class.
This is, of course, a semantics language game that the politicians play. We're not raising taxes because then we'll give you an incentive. We're going to rebate you some of those carbon tax. If you get involved in our special programs, you can get rebates. Or you can install solar panels on your roof. You can buy offset credit. It's just a way for a more permission-based regulatory society that chokes entrepreneurship, chokes small business, and chokes economic growth and makes everyone miserable. And the more miserable it makes you, and the more it fails, the more the regulation, the more the plans fail, the more the planners plan. Oh, well, we didn't do enough regulation. We didn't spend enough. We didn't mandate enough. We didn't subsidize enough. We're down that rabbit hole and it's accelerating. It's accelerating rapidly. And then you have corporations like Exxon. People would always say, like, you're an Exxon-funded lobbyist accusing me. And I'm like, I want to curse. Why the would I be funded by Exxon? And to my knowledge, I have not been. Exxon used to give money. to all these groups that were conservative, and they gave money to liberal groups. At one point, they gave $100 million to Stanford University to study how global warming affects farm odors. And this was not that long ago, maybe 15 years ago. And they still give now more money to promote themselves as green. They don't give to climate skeptics. At one point in time, they gave to both groups on all sides and included some climate skeptics. I wasn't involved in any of that. But secondly, ExxonMobil would never want to support me in the first place. I hated Rex Tillerson. I've said it publicly. Said it was one of Trump's, if not the, probably the, I think I've said it, he was the worst Trump cabinet pick because of his association with ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil supports the UN climate agenda, wants a seat at the table. First thing Rex Tillerson did, the former CEO of Exxon as Trump's Secretary of State, was go to the, one of the first things, go to the Arctic and sign an Arctic Declaration of Climate Change, some kind of thing with the Inuits. And Exxon supports all these regulations because they have the best lawyers and lobbyists, and they can punish their smaller competition and then do more buyouts and crush all the small and middle-sized energy companies. Anyway, they never want to support me. But here's something else Exxon loves is pushing carbon capture storage. This is the greatest boondoggle ever. We're going to capture CO2 from the atmosphere and store it underground and under railway and put it on railways and all kinds of different things. ExxonMobil loves this because it qualifies them for government handouts, government subsidies, and it's just a great, complete boondoggle. This is clip two, Exxon bragging about its carbon capture technology.
Carbon capture for a heavy industry. Let's deliver.
I believed it was longer than that, but anyway, ExxonMobil, of course, all in on that agenda because they love the idea of sucking out the government money. I've always said this is the Republican version of the Green New Deal, the tree planting and the sequestering carbon, because they can give out money to their campaign donors. The donor class gets all that money from the to invest in this carbon capture technology. The same way on the Democrat side, they can give it out to their friends who put up fronts of solar and wind corporations. And by the way, remember the solar and wind, you could have these companies come and go depending on the availability of government subsidies and mandates. And the board members can, and the stockholders can just move from one company to another. They can dissolve, oh, we went under, we're moving on, new company, we've reorganized, and then they can collect money. It just goes on and on. And with the Inflation Reduction Act under the Joe Biden administration, it's going to be $1.2 trillion as currently probably growing for decades into the future. They've got all this money, unless someone comes and revokes it. And that's a future Congress that can't be undone on the executive level that I'm aware of. Okay. Just wanted to remind everyone about the COVID vaccine and the montage of COVID lies surrounding it. This is clip three, safe and effective montage of COVID lies. Let's take a look at what we were told from the mainstream media and our politicians.
Make your plan to get one of these vaccines. They are safe and effective.
If there's one message that needs to cut through all this, the vaccines are safe. I promise you, they are safe and effective. Listen to Dr. Fauci.
When we say that something is safe and effective, we mean it's safe and effective for everyone.
Our vaccinations against COVID-19 are safe. They are effective, and they're more important than ever.
This vaccine has gone through the necessary and rigorous evaluation that ensures the vaccine is safe and highly effective.
These are just words. It's narrative framing. It's kind of like they have a meeting and say, what do we need to say? Just like Deborah Birx and Anthony Fauci said, what do we need to do to get the 10 days to flatten the curve? They knew it was not 10 days. They knew it was going to be a lockdown. They just needed to say what you need to get through the moment. And that's what they said. Wasn't based on anything. We now know multiple instances testifying under oath by pharmaceutical executives. They never even tested the COVID vaccine, whether it stopped transmission. I show you that just to let you remember, don't ever forget. And of course, now you have all the excess deaths, you have all the side effects, you have all, you know, I didn't get the vaccine and I'm not a doctor, but I'm telling you, don't get the COVID vaccine and you can take that to the bank. That's my non-medical opinion. Take it for what it's worth. But I don't think you should get it. I don't think you should allow anyone to get it. Even someone with high comorbidities for COVID, they should not get the vaccine. I'm not a doctor, so don't listen to me. But if you were listening to me, don't get the COVID vaccine. Is that, did I put enough disclaimers in there? I don't know. All right. Aaron Rodgers, the former Green Bay Packers quarterback, now with the New York Jets. I believe he only played about three plays, maybe two series with the New York Jets before he pulled his hamstring. He has come out with a powerful statement on how the establishment, remember, I opened the segment talking about Donald Trump and how the establishment is coming after him. No one is above the law unless you're above the law. Anthony Fauci, of course, is above the law. But Aaron Rodgers, the NFL quarterback who was considered for RFK's running mate, at least floated his name, says he thinks the establishment will kill RFK if he gets close to power. Clip four.
The two-party system that we got in place doesn't work, hasn't been working really since JFK was in office, and we need somebody who's willing to lay it on the line. That's what I love about Bobby. Think about it. They killed his uncle, killed his dad. We know CIA was involved, right? I mean, like, they can't declassify it because it's so damning. Mm. We know the FBI was involved. Hoover hated the Kennedys.
Yeah.
Hated them. Alan Dulles was fired as the director of the CIA after he botched the Bay of Pigs and tried to get Operation Northwoods to happen, to literally start World War III and invade Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
He was fired. He was on the fucking Warren Commission. Alan Dulles was. As was Gerald Ford, who was the right-hand man of J. Edgar Hoover, who hated the Kennedys. Like, we know they're involved. But so Bobby loses his uncle, JFK, his father, RFK. His cousin dies in a plane crash when he was running against Hillary Clinton. Like, I'm not saying that was a conspiracy, but it's kind of a weird coincidence. Bobby's in danger, you know? Like, he's putting himself on the line.
Yeah.
Why? Because he fucking believes in this country. He believes in this country. He believes in the good in people, and he believes he can make a difference. That's somebody I can get behind who's willing to lay it on the line.
That's Aaron Rodgers talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and the threats he and his family faced. Basically, everything he said is probably true. A lot of it's unverifiable, of course, about how his uncle and dad died and who was involved. But, you know, it's all probably true. And I do believe RFK Jr. is a genuine patriot, although I think I have severe disagreements about the regulatory state with him. And I'd have to just know more about it. I still don't quite understand it. As the article in E&E Newswire, which quoted me and they interviewed me for, he doesn't give a lot of specifics at this point. And he just wrote a book on the climate crisis in 2020. Just came out, right? Before COVID, I believe. And now he says he won't talk about climate because it's been hijacked. All great, but I still just want it to be fleshed out. Also, you'd wonder who RFK would pick for a lot of these agencies and positions. I just don't know that there's a lot of slim pickings, even for Republicans to pick. It's slim pickings when it comes to the environment. I just can't imagine who RFK Jr. would pick. So I need to know a lot more about that. But to show you the threat that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is posing to Joe Biden, there's increasing articles, increasing attacks in the media. And you'll notice Republicans aren't that worried about it, especially since he picked Shanahan as vice president. The billionaire from San Francisco is definitely appealing more to a Democrat base. But the Lincoln Project, now the Lincoln Project always makes me laugh. Just because the buffoonery of the Lincoln Project, they do these videos and it's like, who is that appealing to? It's supposed to appeal to like Republicans or something. That's the whole basis for what they did. But they're branching out. They're now doing a smear of RFK Jr. And I think you'll agree, after watching this, you might be ready to pull the lever for RFK Jr. This is the Lincoln Project attempted smear on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Roll clip five.
John Kennedy was a profiling courage. Robert Kennedy spoke to our better angels, tragic leaders who were the best of America.
Ask what you can do for your country.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is a different kind of tragedy. A longtime heroin addict, Kennedy's an anti-vaxxer extremist who thinks all vaccines are dangerous.
There's no vaccine that is, you know, safe and effective.
No vaccines? Bring back polio. Measles, whooping cough.
COVID-19, there's some argument that it is ethnically targeted.
Ethnically targeted? That's racist and crazy. If you believe COVID was a conspiracy, if you're an anti-vaxxer, RFK Jr. is your guy.
There's no vaccine that is, you know, safe and effective.
RFK Jr., a right-wing nut.
Wow. I'm all in when I hear that kind of an ad. Is that an ad for RFK appealing to the conservative base? I don't know. First of all, a couple of things. I love the way they throw in he was a heroin addict. They would never do that of a Democrat candidate. He was a heroin addict. Like they throw that in, like that's immediately disqualifying. And the part about it, racist, there's actually a study that and RFK has explained this. He was citing a specific study that came out, I believe, in a peer-reviewed medical journal, talking about how the virus targets minorities harder or something, like the way the virus hits, hits their system or their immune system. At any rate, I love that. And then they cherry picked him saying no virus is safe and effective. And that's generally cherry picked completely beginning to end. Because you notice they just got that one little soundbite. This is a thoroughly silly group that has no, I mean, the media loves them and the establishment loves this group because they started as an anti-Trump project, the Lincoln Project, kind of like restoring the Republican Party to its roots, which is utterly silly. So anyway, that is RFK Jr. That's the best attack they can do on him. And frankly, it makes me want to vote for him more. Although I still, as I say, I'm probably still going with Donald Trump. As long as Trump doesn't upset me about his COVID policy and promote the vaccine too much. Anyway, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. When we come back, we're going to be joined by New York Post columnist Miranda Devine. Looking forward to this. And she is has a new book out called Laptop from Hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and the Dirty Secrets the President Tried to Hide. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano. Stay tuned. We're going to have Miranda Devine when we return.
The Lights is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. TheLightPaper.co.uk.
Sometimes, a car comes along that changes everything. With innovations never thought possible, and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VW. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I'm Naheem Hines. I support the Muscular Dystrophy Association because they help my mom and kids like Ethan.
Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before.
Join us and learn more at mda.org today.
The human mind is like a computer, no matter how efficient it may be. Its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign
promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right. Happy to welcome Miranda Devine, the New York Post columnist and also author of the book Laptop from Hell, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and the Dirty Secrets the President Tried to Hide. Welcome to the program, Miranda.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be with you.
All right. I want to talk. So we'll start talking about the laptop from hell. I'm going to talk to you about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. But before we do, I wanted to play you this clip. This is a montage of the mainstream media as we live in the United States, where they're trying to essentially disqualify Donald Trump, either disqualify him from the ballot, bankrupt him, seize his assets, make everyone around, any advisors around him, lose their livelihoods or go to jail. But this is what the media says. No one is above the law. Clip four, and I want your reaction. Clip, go ahead.
The idea that no person is above the law is a bedrock principle of American justice.
No man is above the law, no matter what the crime.
And I agree with you. No man is above the law. No person is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No one's above the law.
No one is above the law.
No man is above the law.
Nobody is above the law.
No one is above the law.
No man is above the law.
He has to be held accountable. He's not above the law.
Of course, we're talking about Donald Trump in those clips. Is that true today? Is no one above the law? Is that, how would you react to that?
I would say Trump is below the law and the Bidens are above it. You just look at the impunity with which they have carried on for so many years around the world, picking up lucrative bribes, that's all you can call them, influence peddling, I guess we call it, millions and millions of dollars from China and Russia and Ukraine and Kazakhstan, you name it. And it's only because of some brave whistleblowers that worked at the IRS who were part of this ridiculous five-year ongoing alleged investigation in Biden's home state of Delaware. These two whistleblowers came forward and said, look, the DOJ is going slow. They're not actually investigating. They're stymieing us. They're not allowing us to take out search warrants. We're not allowed to even put the name Biden on a search warrant. We're not allowed to search the cottage on Joe Biden's vast estate in Delaware where Hunter Biden had been living. We're not allowed to, well, we are. I mean, they tried to get a search warrant for a storage locker of Hunter Biden's. And lo and behold, one of the prosecutors tipped off Hunter's lawyers. So that's someone who is above the law. And it was only because of those brave whistleblowers that a modicum of legal, rigor is being placed on Hunter Biden. We'll see what happens in the end of it. But of course, the most serious charges that could have been brought have vanished because the statute of limitations was allowed to run out. And that was part of the point of the slow walking.
When people hear about the Hunter Biden laptop, I mean, let's talk about this from a media perspective for a second. This came out, I guess it was October 20, was it October 20 was the exact date,
yeah.
2020, right before the election. Can you, in your knowledge of free Western nations and media coverage and major political campaigns, can you remember any story ever being suppressed by the so-called free press in any other free nation, whether it be Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada? I should say allegedly free nation now, but was that an unprecedented move, you know, even to the point where Twitter removed it and, of course, Facebook and everyone was listening, saying, oh, we can't verify it. What was the history of that? How unprecedented was that when that information came forward?
Look, Mark, it was just staggering, the lack of curiosity for a story that just had it all. It had sex, it had drugs, it had politics, it had corruption. It was a brilliant story, which is, of course, why we went for it. We would have gone for it if it was Donald Trump's son's laptop. And yet, it was suppressed because this was a pre-bunking operation that had gone on for months. by the FBI, by the CIA, working with the social media companies and with these various NGOs that you know about in Washington, D.C., like the Aspen Institute, that had tabletop exercises for bigwig journalists, for newspaper executives and national security journalists, in which they had a scenario, a theoretical scenario before we even got the laptop back, and I think it was in September of 2020, the scenario was that there was some sort of information about Hunter Biden that was going to be leaked. Then we're told that during one of these weekly meetings that the FBI was having with the social media companies to warn them off about Russian disinformation, the scenario of Hunter Biden, be on the lookout for a hack and dump operation, a leak of information, likely in October and likely about Hunter Biden. So this was weeks before we published. Incredible. Now, when you put it all together and you realize that those 51 former intelligence officials that wrote the letter, I call it the Dirty 51 letter, lying about our stories, saying that it was a Russian information operation what they wanted us to hear was Russian disinformation, that turned off the media from the story. And it was extremely convenient coming right before Joe Biden had to meet Donald Trump in the last debate. And of course, he used that successfully to say, oh, it was a Russian plant. Well, now we know that there were, serving CIA people who were involved in that letter, including the Judiciary Committee has found from internal emails in the CIA that the number three, he's left now, a guy called Andrew Macreadis, he was the CEO of the CIA, number three in charge, he actually signed off on that letter. So there was a lot of hanky-panky going on with the intelligence services, with the FBI, the CIA, covering up for Joe Biden. Now, I still haven't figured out whether that's because he was a protected person. It could be right because he was doing the CIA's bidding. Remember, he'd been for 30 years on the main sort of conduit with the intelligence agencies and Congress, that's the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And for 10 of those years, he'd been either, chair or a ranking member. So he was in bed with, I guess, the intelligence agencies and was doing their bidding. I would say he was their puppet around the world. And maybe they therefore gave him a green light to engage in this influence peddling, or at least have his family do it, because that was well known. I mean, everybody knew that Hunter Biden was working at Burisma, very corrupt company in Ukraine, and he was getting a ridiculous amount of money, $83,000 a month, $1 million a year, which he still pretends to this day. He said in his testimony the other day in Congress that that was just normal, boardroom pay. No, it's not. It's vastly inflated, and especially for someone with zero experience in that field.
Yeah, let's go back. If you go back, if the media, if the intelligence agencies hadn't interfered, I'm speculating here, and the media had taken some due diligence, how do you think that would have played out? It was only 2 weeks left before the election at that point. I guess, 12 days or 13 days or something? Maybe 15. How would that have played out, you think? What kind of impact would this Hunter Biden laptop story have had on the election? I mean, we can only speculate at this point.
Well, I mean, it was an incredibly close election. What was it? 45,000 votes in a handful of states. There are polls that have been done since that show that, if enough people had known, they would have changed their vote. That could have swung the outcome of the election. Of course, we'll never know. But for the American people to have been sold this mythology of Joe Biden that he's cultivated so carefully through his, half century in public life, is just reprehensible that they were kept in the dark about the true nature of the man. I think you see the polls now, which show that the majority of Americans believe that he is unethical, did something unethical, if not illegal, in terms of his family's influence peddling operation. I think that shows you that people certainly are open to the evidence, and the evidence is overwhelming. And even back then in October, it certainly would have given you pause, because what we were publishing was emails from Hunter Biden's Ukrainian benefactor saying, thank you for introducing me to your father in Washington, D.C., your father who was the vice president. And, you know, that flew in the face of Joe Biden's continual refrain during the election campaign that he knew nothing about his son Hunter's overseas business dealings. Well, here he was meeting with one of the top executives from Burisma. So how did he explain that? Well, he never had to explain it, because he just went to ground, hid in the basement for a while, came out when anyone asked him, he'd just bark at them, kept us at bay, lied, his campaign lied, said, oh no, he never went to meet with this Ukrainian. And then it was only after the election that we discovered in the laptop that this was a dinner. It wasn't just a meeting. It wasn't just a handshake. This was an actual sit-down dinner in a fancy restaurant or Italian restaurant in Georgetown, and in a private room. It's called Cafe Milano. And there Hunter Biden had invited his clients from three different countries, from Ukraine, from Russia, from Kazakhstan, to meet his father, specifically to meet his father. That was the point of it. And so we wrote that story. The Washington Post tried to fact check it, untrue. And they checked with the White House, and the White House finally admitted, yes, well, Joe Biden did go to that dinner. Oh, now you mention it. He did go to that dinner, but he not for any nefarious purposes. He didn't stay for very long. And it was for a religious reason. I mean, the whole thing's ridiculous. Even Hunter Biden, in his emails with his best friend in business, Devin Archer, when they're discussing the guest list for this dinner, Hunter Biden says, ostensibly, he uses the word ostensibly, the dinner is for the World Food Program. But really, the real reason we know, because this is part of their MO, was for his father to be paraded out in front of the people who were giving Hunter a lot of money, because his father was extremely powerful. And all these people from around the world wanted was the ability to meet him and to believe that they were going to get some favor from them. And, you know, the most obvious quid pro quo was, of course, with the Ukrainian energy company Burisma, which was under investigation quite aggressively in Ukraine from the prosecutor general, who Joe Biden managed to get fired.
Wow. So when you look at this whole story now, where does it stand? I mean, I can't even keep up with it. I know he's been called to Congress. What do you expect to happen before the election? Is Hunter Biden above the law? Is Joe Biden above the law? Or do you think the law will eventually catch up with him?
Look, there are a lot of moving pieces. I think that Hunter Biden's found himself in a spot of trouble, both in Delaware and in California. California, where he has some unpaid taxes, some tax fraud charges. And look, they were seen as a slam dunk, we know from the IRS whistleblowers, by the Department of Justice Tax Division, who were part of the problem of the go slow. But back in, I think it was 2019, these charges were ready to go, and they're pretty cut and dried. And so he's got a problem there. He's got a problem with this gun in Delaware and with the judge there, Judge Noriega, who picked up this fraudulent sweetheart plea deal that had so many hairs on it. She picked that up last year, and so that's why everything fell apart. So I think he might have problems there, but of course he's always got daddy's pardon power, and I have no doubt that for all that Joe Biden says, oh, I would never do that, of course he'll do it. As far as Joe Biden goes, I mean, he'll be 82 just after the election in November. I don't know, and you just saw with the Robert Hur classified documents investigation where the special counsel Robert Hur said, well, look, he's a well-meaning basically befuddled old man, and we couldn't bring charges because a jury wouldn't be able to convict because he's basically senile. So I'm not sure that there would be the stomach to do anything. But really, he's also been extremely clever. He's been influence peddling for, you know, 50 years plus, and he knows about plausible deniability, and he knows that, you know, the money is going to his family members, which, I mean, that's still bribery, and everyone around the world knows. In China, they call them princelings, these sons and daughters of the powerful officials who you pay the bribe to. You never pay it to the official. So I wouldn't expect that Joe Biden would be going to jail anytime soon. But certainly, I think that James Comey is going to be changing a lot of the rules around families of presidents and vice presidents and the executive branch being able to take this kind of money. And very important, I think that the American people are now aware and will become more aware, I think, as the impeachment investigation comes out with their final report, that you know, Joe Biden is not Honest Joe. He's not Lunch Pail Joe from Scranton. This is the guy who lives large. He lives like Great Gatsby. He wears beautiful clothes. He lives in mansions. And his family all lives a Rolls-Royce lifestyle. And he's not what he said he was. And he lies incessantly. So I think that that's important, that mythology about himself has been completely punctured.
All right, we're talking with Miranda Devine, New York Post columnist, author of the book Laptop from Hell, available on Amazon, Hunter Biden, Big Tech, and the Dirty Secrets the President Tried to Hide. We'll be right back. We take a quick break. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned for more Miranda Devine.
Might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
On a virtual road, you can test the limits of your driving ability to see how fast you can go under the most extreme conditions, like when it's dark, when the weather's bad, or when the unexpected happens. The higher the speed, the harder the impact. But driving isn't a game or a race. When you're on the road, just 10 miles per hour over the limit can mean the difference between life and death. You're responsible for people's lives and your own. Slow down and save lives.
From economics to the woke agenda, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We're talking with Miranda Devine, the New York Post columnist. All right, a question. Donald Trump, why does the intelligence agencies hate him so much? You know, I was just reading here. This is from NPR reported years ago that Trump's always referred to them as the deep state and their witch hunts out to get him. But it turns out it was a CIA employee, the current employee of the CIA, who did the whistleblower complaint about the Trump's phone call with Ukraine that got him into all that media controversy. So the question is, what did Trump do to the media establishment to make them hate him, to make these agents come out and declare all this Russian disinformation? Why do they hate Donald Trump so much?
I think because he's a maverick, you know, he's not one of them. He's not like Joe Biden, steeped in the foreign affairs establishment. He's not, you know, a regular visitor at the Atlantic Council, which is the NATO's agency in Washington. he's just goes by first principles. And I think that worked really well during his presidency because, you know, you saw the Abraham Accords just as one example. And so I think they don't like that because they have, you know, what some people call the blob. They have their own agenda, which is really quite secret from and probably not favoured by the majority of the American voters. They have their plans of what they want to do. And for instance, in Ukraine, you know, they saber-rattle about Russia all the time. Russia is a nuclear power. They were hell-bent on, you know, bringing Ukraine into NATO, into Europe, away from Russia. Russia didn't like that. They, you know, this was a provocation. Joe Biden was all for it. And I don't think that Donald Trump would have gone down. I think he would have probably ruined their plans. And their plans had been kind of 15, 16 years in the making. And so I think with China as well, you know, they wanted the American people to see Russia as the biggest threat, not China, even though Russia was kind of a fading power and China is really the Leviathan that's competing and perhaps threatening American interests, certainly in the Pacific. And so for whatever reason, the blob has its own agenda, which is opaque. And it's not ever been explained to the American people, and it leads us into wars. And that's what Donald Trump didn't do. And I think a lot of people, when it comes to foreign policy, said they liked the way that the world was quite peaceful when Donald Trump was there. I mean, we forget that when he came into office, there was the raging war going on in Syria. There was ISIS beheading people. I mean, there were a lot of problems. North Korea was, President Obama said to President Biden when he came in, look, the biggest problem is North Korea. And you know, the Abraham Accords. So there were a lot of good things that he did apart from the blob. In fact, in spite of the blob, and they hated him for it. I think that's it. Partly, maybe there's also just this, you know, the fact that we had John Brennan was the head of the CIA when Donald Trump came in and they laid that dirty trick for him, the Russia hoax, and maybe some people believed it. And also you've got a lot of these intelligence people living in Washington, D.C. They have wives who are in the Washington, D.C. party circuit, and they all just despise Donald Trump and think that he's not just uncouth, but he's an existential threat.
Yeah, they go after him. Well, when you look at Donald Trump's history, like I was mentioning, the 2000 early debate of the Republican Party, he came out, he asked why we needed NATO. He came out against Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, he really upset him. So it seems to be beyond Trump, though. Were you, as a working journalist with, you know, mainstream publication, were you surprised at the collusion and the corruption, the so-called deep state of the intelligence agencies with attacks on free speech, the so-called Twitter files, all the revelations of embedding, you know, whether it's defense intelligence, CIA, intelligence agencies telling them who to ban, what they can say, what they can't say, especially during COVID? Did that surprise even a veteran journalist like you? Did you think it was that deep that this, I guess you'd call it the blob, had extended that far into our free speech rights?
Kind of did and kind of didn't. You know, they're pretty much unaccountable, and it's been going on like that for quite some time. I remember back in 2019 or 2018, it might have been, I was still in Australia, and there was, Australia's part of the Five Eyes, and there was obviously a request from the United States for Australia to allow these backdoor entry into encrypted apps. You know, there was a slight amount of a furor about that, not a lot. And suddenly, with the stroke of a pen, it allows the intelligence services to spy, to go outside the American Constitution, use Australia to get around the Constitution and spy on its own people. That was, to me, an early indication of what was going on. I think the extent of it was kind of staggering. But now this is our reality. This is what we live in. We live in a country where there is no privacy. You are going to be spied on. We saw, I mean, John Brennan and James Clapper lied about the spying that was going on into Americans. And we keep on, they turn around the CIA and the NSA or whoever, and when they get caught out and they say, oh, sorry, we didn't mean to, we won't do that again. The FBI as well. And they just, they don't care because there's no oversight, there's no accountability. You see, with the valiant efforts by people like Senator Chuck Grassley, who has been in the Senate a long time, and he understands, you know, the tricks that these agencies get up to, even with his valiant efforts to protect whistleblowers and so on, they just thumb their nose at them. I remember there was last year, was it last year or the year before, when Christopher Wray, the FBI director, went in for a Senate oversight hearing, and he said, oh, I have to leave early. And Chuck Grassley was a bit surprised and said, oh, but we had thought we were going to have two whole sessions here. And Wray says, oh, no, you know, I can't, I need to leave. And Grassley goes, oh, do you have work? And Wray lied and said, yes, I do. And what we found out was he was using the FBI jet, corporate jet, the Gulfstream, to fly off to his family's holiday house in the Adirondacks early. And so that's the kind of contempt that these people have for oversight, for congressional oversight. And so I mean, obviously, there needs to be at least some sort of a church committee or what, but it seems that the Democrats are absolutely in bed with these agencies, with their very illiberal behavior towards free speech. You know, it was the Biden administration that was calling up and bullying Facebook and Twitter and telling them to take down posts that were dissenting from government policy, or it wasn't just COVID, it was, you know, Ukraine, it was memes that were maybe slightly mocking of Jill Biden. These were all fair game for censorship. And, you know, once people get the taste for censorship, it never ends. And I think that when Joe Biden continually calls Donald Trump an authoritarian, he's really just projecting. That's his nature. That is what he believes. He thinks, like so much many of it, people in his administration, that the only way to control the American people and have them, you know, stamp out wrongthink and stop them going for populist nationalist leaders like Donald Trump, the only way to do that is to just stop them being able to speak and stop them being able to access information that might, you know, make them a bit more aware of the truth about life.
Yeah, it's amazing in America where if you hold an opinion or a thought that's different than the official government report, you're automatically disinformation, misinformation, et cetera.
Malinformation.
And malinformation, yeah. All right, you wrote a column recently about polls show Biden closing the gap on Trump, but that's where the good news ends for the Democrats. So we're facing the 2024 election. What exactly is the good news for Biden, and what's the bad news for the Democrats?
Well, I mean, it's been quite hilarious to watch. A couple of polls have come out. The latest one over the weekend was the New York Times Siena poll, which have been trumpeted as, oh, Joe Biden's closed the gap on Trump. You know, now they're even Steven. The margin of error of that poll on the weekend, the New York Times Siena, is 3.3%. And, you know, they're within 1%. Really nothing's changed. It's just within the margin of error. People just see what they want to see and they spin a narrative that suits them. And they want to give Joe Biden momentum. And look, I mean, no doubt he'll win the popular vote because Democrats have been doing that lately. But in the battleground states, it's not been looking good for him. I think there was a Wall Street Journal poll out earlier this month showing that Trump was ahead by 2 to 8 points in 6 of the 7 battleground states they looked at, and I think tied in Wisconsin. And when you dig down into that New York Times Siena poll, even if you take the sort of boosters of Biden at face value that now they're neck and neck, There are some very bad indicators there. For instance, you know, the country going in the wrong direction. It's something like 2/3 of people, 80% of people think the economy is like terrible or fair. And then also people who look at the Biden years and compare them to the Trump years, and it's almost 2-1 that they look at the Trump years with, you know, rose-colored glasses. And then there's also, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's quite a high percentage. It's a majority of people who say that that Joe Biden has been bad for the country. And when it comes to democracy, which is the centerpiece of Joe Biden's, you know, upcoming campaign.
We're out of time, but thank you. Sorry. We're out of time, Miranda. Thank you so much for joining Unleashed on TNT today.
Pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thank you. This is Unleashed. We'll see you next time. Thanks a lot for watching.